He had written that he would give up all the splendors of Spain for one glimpse of where the temple once stood. How then could he not journey to the Holy Land? How then could he not journey to Jerusalem? And so he set out to a land that had just been recently conquered in the Crusades, to a city wherein Judaism had been destroyed. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 130, Judah Halevi and Jerusalem. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. It is one of the most famous poems in Jewish history, beginning with the words, "My heart is in the east, and I am in the end of the west." In the original Hebrew, the poem reads as follows: "Lipi b'mizrach v'anochi b'sof ma'arav, eich etamat asher ochal v'eich ye'arav, eicha ashalem nedarai v'esarai, ba'od tzion b'chevel adom v'ani b'chevel arav, yekal b'einai azov kol tu svarad kimo, yekar b'einai ra'ot afrot divir necharav." These words were written by Judah Halevi in the first part of the 12th century. He had come from Christian Spain to Muslim Spain, imbibing knowledge and literary art in an age of culture, becoming the greatest post-biblical Hebrew poet in Jewish history. And yet, as he tells us in this poem, he does not feel fulfilled. He feels a yearning for a land and a city. The poem has many, many translations, but none can capture the simplicity and the sublimity of the words in the original, with most lines ending with the rhyming sound av. And so I describe the poem in prose. Halevi tells us that he is in the west, ma'arav, yearning for the east. And therefore, how can he enjoy what he eats? Ve'ech ye'arav, and how can it be pleasant? He then tells us that he knows that Zion bechevel Edom, va'ani bechevel arav. Jerusalem is under Christian rule, while he is in the furthest point of Muslim-ruled Spain, part of a people who is bound, in other words, not free under this rule. In these simple lines, Halevi captures all that had unfolded over the past few decades. The Crusades were launched in the name of protecting the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and ensuring the ability of Christian pilgrims to access sites in Jerusalem. As histories of the First Crusade recount, it was launched in 1095 by Pope Urban in the name of protecting the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and ensuring the ability of Christian pilgrims to access sites in Jerusalem, and as a possible means of uniting Christendom east and west. The war of Christians against Muslims ended up ensuring that the Jews lost all access to Jerusalem. With the Crusader conquest, the cave synagogue at the bottom of the Temple Mount was burned, with Jews burned alive in it. The Temple Mount itself was transformed into a Christian area, its buildings made into churches and other Christian sites. The Crusade was waged by nobles and princes who then, upon conquering the Holy Land, divided it up as kingdoms. Jerusalem was ruled by Baldwin of Boulogne, and then following his death in 1118 by his cousin Baldwin II, who then bequeathed the kingdom of Jerusalem at the end of his life to his daughter Melisende in 1131. Thus Halevi, writing in the first part of the 12th century, describes how this war between two world faiths has cut him off from the ability to truly access the Holy Land itself, even though, as he ruefully concludes in the poem with another Av rhyme, he would gladly leave all the good of Sepharad, of Spain, to see the Dvir Necharav, the site of the destroyed Holy Temple, which would, even lacking a built temple itself, still, because of its sanctity, seem much more splendid to him than any of the splendors of Spanish civilization. Halevi would ultimately act on his love for Jerusalem and depart for the Holy Land, becoming in the process perhaps the most famous pilgrim in Jewish history. While an entire series of podcasts could be devoted to Judah Halevi, it must suffice at this point to state the following: that Judah Halevi's religious poetry and his great work of Jewish thought, the Kuzari, focus first and foremost on two central themes: the remarkable story of the Jews and the special nature of the land of Israel. The work known as the Kuzari opens with a Khazar Gentile king who surveys the world's religions looking for theological truth. He interviews a Christian, a Muslim, and a philosopher. And then Halevi writes, quote, "He then invited a Jewish rabbi and asked him about his belief. The rabbi replied, 'I believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, who led the children of Israel out of Egypt with signs and miracles.'" End quote. The king is unimpressed by this answer, for he had expected the rabbi to speak of God's universal power, not his connection to a particular people. And so he coldly replies, quote, "I had not intended to ask any Jew because I am aware of their reduced condition and narrow-minded views, as their misery left them nothing commendable. Now shouldst thou, O Jew, not have said that thou believest in the Creator of the world, its governor and guide, and in him who created and keeps thee, and such attributes which serve as evidence for every believer, and for the sake of which he pursues justice in order to resemble the Creator in his wisdom and justice." End quote. To this, the rabbi readily replies that Judaism does indeed proclaim universal truths about a God who created the world, who made man in his image, who communicates a moral code to all humanity. But, the rabbi emphasizes, this universal God is to be known on earth first and foremost through the particular. And that particular is the story of the people of Israel, the miracle that is biblical Israel's history. The rabbi says, as part of his reply, quote, "In the same way God commenced his speech to the assembled people of Israel, 'I am the Lord your God who has led you out of the land of Egypt.' But he did not say, 'I am the creator of the world and your creator.' Now in the same style I spoke to thee, a prince of the Khazars, when thou didst ask me about my creed." End quote. For Judah Halevi, it is Israel's memory of the Exodus that is the argument for the existence of God. And there is, perhaps, a way of expanding upon Halevi's argument, which is that in Judaism, God is to be found first and foremost, not through philosophy, but through history, through Jewish history. And one need not be philosophically trained in order to be moved by the question posed by the Southern American writer Walker Percy, who once reflected, quote, "Why does no one find it remarkable that in most world cities today there are Jews, but not one single Hittite, even though the Hittites had a great flourishing civilization, while the Jews nearby were a weak and obscure people? When one meets a Jew in New York or New Orleans or Paris or Melbourne, it is remarkable that no one considers the event remarkable. What are they doing here? But it is even more remarkable to wonder, if the Jews are here, why are there not Hittites here? Where are the Hittites? Show me one Hittite in New York City." End quote. Building on Halevi, one can make the argument that it is through the miracle of the Jews that God is known. And for Halevi, it is also the case that it is in the land of Israel that the God of Israel is first and foremost spiritually met. For it is the encounter with the God of Israel in the land of Israel that endows the land with an unparalleled spiritual beauty. Thus another very famous poem by Judah Halevi, the words of this Sephardic poet recited by Ashkenazic Jews on the 9th of Av. The poem begins, "Zion, halo tishali lishlom asirayach. Zion, will you not ask if peace be with your captives?" And then Halevi goes on to describe the land of Israel itself. And I'm utilizing here the translation in F.E. Peter's compendium. Judah Halevi says, "To wail for your affliction, I am like the jackals, but when I dream of the return of your captivity, I am a harp for your songs." Adding, "The life of souls is the air of your land, and of pure myrrh, the grains of your dust, and honey from the comb, your rivers." End quote. And Halevi adds how he longs to walk, quote, "upon the desolate ruins where your holiest dwellings were." End quote. "I am," Halevi says in this poem, "a harp for your songs." That is how he describes himself to Zion. In his Nobel Prize speech, Shai Agnon spoke of being a Levite, whose calling was really to sing in the temple, and how his literature was a replacement. And here, Judah Halevi, Judah the Levite, references his own poetry as a harp, betokening the love of Jerusalem, the love of the land, and the ultimate return of the Jewish people. And the same can be said for Judah Halevi's theology. In his Kuzari, after the rabbi explains to the Khazar king all of Judaism's tenets, we are told that, quote, "The rabbi was then concerned to leave the land of the Khazari and to betake himself to Jerusalem. The king was loath to let him go," end quote. After asking the rabbi why he needs to journey to the land of Israel, the rabbi explains that it's not enough for God to know the feelings of the Jewish people in exile. The people must make their emotions manifest. And if Jews are to hope for redemption, they must show God how beloved the land of Israel is to them. The rabbi says, quote, "This sacred place serves to remind men and to stimulate them to love God, being a reward and promise, as it is written, 'Thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favor her, yea, the set time is come. For thy servants take pleasure in her stones and embrace the dust thereof.'" This means, the rabbi concluded, that Jerusalem can only be rebuilt when Israel yearns for it to such an extent that they embrace her stones and dust. End quote. Embrace her stones and dust. It is only when the Jewish people embrace the stones of Zion and show their love for them that redemption for Halevi will come. It is a striking conclusion, and in the book, the king of the Khazars is struck as well and replies, quote, "If this be so, it would be a sin to hinder thee. It is, on the contrary, a merit to assist thee. May God grant thee his help and be thy protector and friend. May he favor thee in his mercy." End quote. Of course, the trip taken by the rabbi in the work The Kuzari parallels that taken by Judah Halevi himself. For we know that he, in the end of his life, around the beginning of the 1140s, left Spain behind, journeying to the land of Israel. And the statement made by the rabbi to the Kuzari king, allows us to understand Halevi's motivations. Halevi had given the Jewish people the greatest words of longing for the Holy Land and for the Temple Mount. He had written that he would give up all the splendors of Spain for one glimpse of where the temple once stood. How then could he not journey to the Holy Land? How then could he not journey to Jerusalem? And so he set out to a land that had just been recently conquered in the Crusades, to a city wherein Judaism had been destroyed. We do not know what happened to Judah Halevi after he set out on the final leg of his journey. It is said that he was killed upon arrival, coming so close and yet not seeing the Temple Mount of Jerusalem, not fulfilling the dream expressed in the poem with which we began, of looking upon the Temple Mount. But if that is the case, then those that did later see the Temple Mount had Judah Halevi spiritually with them. For the words that Judah Halevi used in one of the poems that we have just cited, "I am a kinnor l'shirayach, a harp for your songs," was eventually made part of the most modern song about Jerusalem, the song composed by Naomi Shemer, "Jerusalem of Gold." Yerushalayim shel zahav v'shel nechoshet v'shel or, halo l'chol shirayach ani kinnor. Jerusalem of gold, of bronze, and light, I am a harp for all your songs. Thus it can truly be said that as the paratroopers came to the old city in 1967, making manifest, again, the miraculous story of the Jewish people that was so central to Judah Halevi, and as Jerusalem of gold was sung, it marked a completion of the trip taken by Judah Halevi himself, so that he lived at that moment, just as when every Jew bestows love upon Jerusalem, Judah Halevi lives still. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.